So, hello, everybody, and welcome to Desai, the Realist Philosopher. Say, y'all doing today? Hope you're all doing good, fine, and well. I am here with my good friend, Amir, from MGTOW TV. How you doing, Amir?
I am doing very well, sir. How about yourself today?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. Could be better. I could be better. I suppose it could be worse, though. Could be dead.
Yeah, that's so. So we wanted to know what happened to you for the past almost over half a year, because I remember I sent you a message a couple of months ago, like, hey, man, where are you at? Is everything okay with you? And fortunately, you replied back, so we want to know what happened in the past, say, half a year.
Well, it's actually, if I recall, it's been quite a bit longer. I think the last time we spoke was like late August last year, and at that time I was out there in Montana, horrible. Well, it wasn't a horrible idea at the time. I had gotten a good job offer and I went out there. But for those of you who follow me, you know what happens. But for those of you out there that don't know what happened, I contract ended for the position I had been working for almost 20 years. And so I essentially went back to what I used to do before that. Got a really good job offer out in Montana. Took it, moved. But my first week there, I got injured. Didn't seem too serious, ended up to be very serious, resulting in sepsis, shock, coronary, chemically induced coma, and me nearly dying. And so when last we spoke, I believe we were talking about me actually doing that car life stuff, was it?
Yes, that's what you wanted to know, because I did car life for 5 years in L.A., and every now and then when I go and I travel, I still do car life. And personally, I love it. I mean, how about you? What's your take on it?
Well, I'm too old, so it didn't quite work out for me. And I was too sick. So I'm a very stoic individual and very little bothers me. I can deal with a lot of adversity. But at a certain point, reality is just too averse to you and the realities of your biology and what you can deal with. So I planned for it. I thought that it was something I could handle. And indeed, if my health had been where it was before I got sick, it wouldn't have been a problem. Of course, I wouldn't have been doing that because I was, had a good job offer. I was looking for a place and things were working out well. Then I got injured. And a month later, there I was. It seemed like a viable option, except my mind was pre-illness. And I hadn't really come to terms with the reality of where I was physically. So it was a horrible, horrible idea. I was in such bad shape after the illness. It nearly killed me, actually. Just two nights in the car. It was just a no-go. Just a really, really bad idea. Just so you know, folks, if you get sepsis, you spend, they have to put you in a chemically induced coma and you have a series of heart attacks while you're in the coma, don't, a couple weeks later, consider living in your car. Okay, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, that's a lesson that I'm certain everybody's going to take to heart on that one. And what have you been doing in the past half year since living in a car is no longer valid for you? I think you said something about having a low credit card score because of the medical bills. And you know what, by the way, guys, he has a fundraiser on GoFundMe. I'm going to put that in the link if you guys want to help him out. I know I did, so the link is going to be in the description, dudes. Please help out a fellow MGTOW, because as you all know, we just give so much to the community, and every now and then one hand washes the other, like TFM always says. So my friend, again, tell us what happened. And you know, one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, and I know you want to not be 100% about it for doxing purposes, but what exactly is it that, well, not exactly, but in a roundabout way, what is it that you do? Like electronics engineering, chemical engineering? I think it has to do with chemicals or engineering, something like that.
It's thank you for asking. Yeah, I don't mind getting into peripheral details. So mechanical engineering, and so insofar as what happened, yeah, so I had substantial savings when I moved out to Montana. I'm a very conscientious guy, so I tend to be very well prepared. And before I did that, before I moved out to Montana, I was a logistics manager for a company that I actually founded in China, where I lived for 14 plus years. And because of changing governmental policies, COVID, all that in China, I had to get out. And unfortunately, ended up selling the company for far less than it was actually worth. That's something we can discuss later in the conversation. I came back to America. The new owner wanted me to continue working for him. That was the contract that ended. And then I moved to Montana to get back to, you know, where I originally started, the kind of work I used to do before that, back in my early 30s. And anyway, early to mid-30s. Late 30s, I guess. Well, anyway, that was something I had done 20 years before that. And unfortunately, the injury, getting hurt, it just ate up my savings. Yeah, I mean, I had more than $100,000 in hospital bills. And unfortunately, I was going to, but I didn't get around to picking up my insurance that I used, the coverage I used to have. And I didn't carry it over. It was an oversight on my part that cost me big time. And because of that, yeah, my credit is screwed. And that's why I was, and also because the medical bills and everything ate up all my savings. And that's why I was considering doing the car life thing, because I was just at a point of, you know, I didn't see any other options. And fortunately, you know, other options did arise, you know. But, yeah, so, yeah, engineering, mechanical engineering. But unfortunately, that's not what I'm doing right now. The work requires too much labor. It's too difficult. What I've been doing lately is the only work that I could find that I'm able to do. I don't want to get into that too much. A lot of nut jobs out there that don't like my political views. I don't want to get into so much detail. It won't take much detail for them to know exactly what I am doing and cause me problems. But the illness pretty much destroyed my body, my stamina. I mean, I don't know if anybody out there knows what septic shock is, but combine that with, you know, coronary, and you got a lot of problems. It's very difficult for me to work. Technically, I'm disabled. I shouldn't be working. That's what doctors have told me, but I am anyway because I have no real choice. So I'm killing myself right now, trying to keep my head above water. And it's proven very difficult, hence the fundraiser I just posted. The work that I am doing, I didn't know it very well before I started doing it. Obviously, I still don't because there's a seasonal aspect to it, at least to where I am. And I was just starting to reach a point where I was going to, you know, break even on a monthly basis. And then the business just dropped off a cliff. And it turns out like 3 months of the year, there's virtually no business. And it just happened almost overnight. And now I'm scrambling, trying to keep my head above water. So that's kind of where I am right now. And as far as you mentioned something about my credit score, I'm living in kind of temporary housing, although I don't know how temporary it is. I've been here almost 7 months. but it's not your regular standard lease situation. I pay like by the week, and so it's abysmally expensive. And because of the whole hospital bills, you know, and that ruining my credit, I can't get like a standard regular yearly lease anymore with an apartment that would be much more affordable. So that's kind of where I am now, and it is what it is. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, how come you didn't go on disability? Because like I spoke to you before we did the record, and I was involved in a car accident, and I'm looking at going into disability. I got all the doctor's notes, I got all the MRI. You can get a lawyer who can put you on a federal SSDI. With your case, it should be a slam dunk.
Well, so the problem with that is I did speak to a lawyer, and it takes forever. It's a long process. 1 to 2 years is what they told me. I spoke to several lawyers. And the problem is that during that period of time, you can only make a certain amount. So the amount is ridiculously low. It's like some absurdly low amount where, I mean, you would have to have like the most ridiculously cheap rent and the most ridiculously low living expenses to be able to, and you'd have to maintain that low threshold of earnings for 6 months to a year. It's not possible. That's just not possible. So that's the main issue. As I make, I have to make above a certain amount to survive, but that amount is killing me. And now I'm in this short period where, you know, if I don't essentially change my living situation, I would end up homeless not too far off. And so I'm kind of in this limbo. And if I make it until September, staying here, I don't see how that'd be possible unless something radically changed with, you know, the amount of business that I'm getting, which won't happen because of the seasonal element. You know, so it's sort of this, you know, you can't survive making that little, so you got to make more, but that's not even possible right now for the next several months. So it's really this damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of a situation. And it's just the reality of it at the moment.
Another thing that I think you brought up in the past is that you're looking into writing a book. Maybe this will be the perfect time to get started on it if you haven't already.
So that's what my plan is. But that's not going to pay anything. But I'm going to do that. So I haven't been producing much I haven't been producing any content the past 6 months, and hardly any for the past 10 months, obviously, because I got sick, the illness, and the past 7 months. So I got out of the hospital, and then immediately moved and started working like, not very long after, less than 2 months after getting out of the hospital. Bad idea. And I just went, but you have no choice, right? Kill yourself or you're going to die for sure. And so for the past 7 months, I've just been devoting all of my time to working as much as humanly possible. Now, I will say that the work I do requires constant attention and focus, and if you don't have that, you're going to die. You're going to have an accident and die. And I can only do so many hours a day before I start to get what I call a peripheral fog, where my ability to focus and concentrate starts to wane. I get this white cloud, sort of like the static on a TV that's set to no station. And it just begins to creep in ever more until my vision is limited to as if you were looking through a telescope. And so obviously that's not good. if you're behind the wheel of a vehicle, and so you're going to crash and die. And so I'm very limited to how much time I can put in to working. I max it out as much as I can. And as I said, I was just starting to reach a point where I could push myself to be in the black. And then this past month, business dropped off a freaking cliff, so it wouldn't matter. I can put in the exact amount of time I was where I was just barely making enough to break even, but I'm going to get half that, if that much. So that's sort of where I am right now. That's the reality of my current situation. So that's why I started my fundraiser, because I thought to myself, I didn't think to myself, I'm faced with the reality of, because where I live, the rent is extremely high. It's much more than you would pay for an apartment that is, a yearly lease. It being the temporary living arrangements, supposed to be anyway. So I thought to myself, well, what can I do to drastically lower my bills in very short order, so that I don't end up being on the street? Because that would kill me, because I'm on medication for my heart, for my kidneys. If I can't work, I can't afford that, and then I actually will die. So that would not be good. And then I thought to myself, well, wait a second, what if I, there is one way to drastically lower my living expenses, and that would be to get an RV or motorhome. But they're very expensive, right? Well, sure, if you buy one that is in good working order. And then I started thinking, well, you know, with my background, I can fix stuff very easy. It's not hard for me with my skill set, with my knowledge, with my human capital in that regard. So then I started thinking to myself, well, there's lots of motorhomes out there that are fixer-uppers that are for sale for very, very cheap. What if I buy one of those and then I fix it up, and instead of renting an apartment, which I can't because my hospital bill screwed my credit for the foreseeable future, what if I buy an RV super cheap that's a mess, fix it up, and then rent a space to park it in, and then I live in the RV? While not all ideal, well, realist philosopher, how's that any different than the car camping thing? Well, it's actually a home on wheels. You know, it's a self-contained actual environment. It has air conditioning. It has heat. It's climate controlled. It's basically a studio apartment on wheels. And so it's got all the modern amenities. I would just have to fix it up, essentially. And I started doing research, and I found you can rent a space with electric, sewage, water for cheaper than you could even rent a studio apartment on a yearly basis. So that seems the most viable option for me, and hence why I started that fundraiser, because if I can do that, then my health issues and any other considerations won't really be an issue. Disability, making too much, and by the way, this isn't something that's really sustainable. To be totally completely honest, I feel worse than I did 3 months ago. You would think I would be feeling better as time passes, but I'm actually feeling worse. So I need to drastically lower my expenses so I can stop killing myself, so I can get better, and so I can get on that disability. Or so that it can at least have the ability to qualify. So if I can get a used RV, and I already have one in the works that I'm looking at, fix it up and rent a space for it, that would cut my expenses so much that it would solve all my problems, essentially. So that's kind of where I am at right now.
Did you find any RVs already that you're already looking at and considering?
Yes, several. And you can get, and they all have the necessary amenities, just varying degrees of difficulty. Most of the people selling used RVs are selling them because they ended up sitting for a while because they were used for the exact same purpose that I'm planning on using it for. That being that the person, someone lived in them for years and they let it sit and they didn't run it. And what happens when you do that, especially with this corn gas that we use, with all that ethanol, it gums up the fuel systems and causes various mechanical issues that I can fix very easily, but, you know, your everyday layperson cannot. And so a lot of these RVs are on sale for very cheap. And so you just have to, if you know how, fix the issues with the fuel system, maybe some problems with the generator because they just let it sit for so long, and you get them for a deal. I mean, a literal deal. It's a lot of them are for sale very, very cheap.
Like, when you say cheap, are we talking like under 6K or above 6K by a little?
Under 1,000.
Under 1,000, really?
Yeah.
Wow!
Well, you see, the problem is a lot of these people, they have an RV, they park it, they rent it out to someone on their property to live in, or they let a relative live in it, but and they do this for years, but what happens is it sits there, the tires rot, the engine becomes inoperable, the fuel system seizes up, maybe the engine seizes because it hasn't been running a while, and so it's a paperweight. And so eventually, when it comes time for them to move, when it comes time for them to continue with their life and they got to get rid of it, it doesn't run. And so they try to sell it. They can't sell it. It doesn't run. And so they have to sell it at a price that is absurdly low because, you know, the market says so. Nobody will buy it otherwise. And so what you're going to have to do is if you're the buyer, you're going to have the mechanical knowledge to fix it. And you're going to have to be willing to put the time and the effort in, and you have to have that human capital, that engineering knowledge, and I fortunately do.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about is we're kind of circling back a little bit, but what
sure.
is the, if you said it's getting worse, what is your prognosis about longevity? Better, worse, same?
So the doctor told me I really should be resting. Now I report back to him on a monthly basis how I feel, how my physical health is doing. And I guess a lot of that's subjective. He can only go off of what I tell him. They can't look inside me. When I first got out of the hospital, he was pretty real with me. I asked him, what's the prognosis? How long am I going to live? As you said, the longevity, what are my odds? And he's like, okay, so first of all, people who suffer what you did have gone through sepsis. It's so severe that it leads to shock, that it leads to the kind of condition that you were in. 40% of those people, they live 5 years. I was like, that's not good. I don't like that. And he's like, right. So we look at people who have had the same kind of severity of injury and aftercare as you, who went through similar circumstances. It's a 40% after 5 years. That's their lifespan. 40% of the people. The other 60%, it's mixed, essentially, with I think maybe 20% going on to live a normal lifespan. It's not great, so yeah, because it's an entire system-wide illness. Every single system in your body is damaged. Your brain, your heart, every organ, it's system-wide. I mean, so it's bad. Severity depends on how well you're doing. So self-reporting after the fact, 6 months later, a year later, I should be resting. I should be, you know, not working so much, if at all. No choice again. As far as, you know, the disability thing, again, I explained that situation. I have to be able to be in a certain income strata for 6 months to a year to be able to qualify and get the disability, or longer than a year. But the problem with that is that I can't afford to be in that income strata. I'd have to essentially be sleeping in a tent, and I wouldn't survive that. I wouldn't want to do that, number one. But at the same time, the situation I'm in now with my health, I keep pushing myself the way I am, that might kill me. But I'd rather die that way than the indignity of the other way, which would be being a homeless person. That's not happening to me. I'm not ever going to. I mean, you know, I'll work myself to death and kill myself that way before I die in that kind of fashion. So that's kind of my prognosis. The one good thing that I had going for me, I was a very good shape. I've always taken good care of myself. Nothing's for sure. I can still go on to live a normal, regular lifespan. could. I don't know. But some things certainly have to change with my living situation and my current lifestyle, or that's probably not going to be the case.
What is the magic number for the fundraiser where you can get a RV?
I don't know. It depends on the vehicle itself. Could be a small amount, could be in just a couple grand, could be higher. It depends on the RV itself. I'm imagining 5 to 6K minimum. I doubt I'll get that. I don't expect to, with the economy the way it is. I haven't produced much content in the past 6 to 8 months, so I don't know that there's very many people out there that even remember I exist, who I am, but that would be ideal. That would be around the minimum required, because just getting it isn't enough, because whatever I get, I can tell you that, number one, the ones I have, there's several that I'm looking at right now, they all have similar issues. All going to need new tires. Various levels of work going to need to be done inside, replacing the insulation, new paneling, possible water damage that has to be addressed, new AC units, potentially fix the generator, problems with the electrical, mechanical issues that might need to be addressed in regards to the fuel system. So it's not a small expense, but at the same time, it's what's viable for me, because the mainstream orthodox way of living, I no longer qualify for. Well, at the same time, we have a broken safety net system that rewards people for being layabout, shiftless bums. Meanwhile, people like myself, who, if they were actually had access to what they're supposed to be able to have access to, would go on to be productive members of society. I'm one of these people that's been paying into the system for 40 years, and you would think that I'd be able to more readily access it, but you got to be near dead and living in the woods to qualify, which would kill you in and of itself, which is probably part of the reason they make it so difficult to qualify. They hope you'll die before you can. But people who, you know, have no problem living in these kind of conditions, your drug addicts and your people who essentially don't want to put into the system, oh, well, they qualify. Yeah, they'll get it. They got no problem. And, of course, they're not about to die. Many of them are. Some of them are. But you know, many of them, no, hey, I'm fine with living on the streets until I get this disability that I really shouldn't be getting because I chose to be a drug addict and alcoholic. But hey, you know, let people like me subsidize their bad choices. So it's not an enviable position, but the 5-6K is about the bare minimum. A lot of the work I can do myself. I can get a lot of the materials very cheap at wholesale. I know where to shop for that kind of stuff. And I can get the RV initially at a very cheap price. But things like tires, I mean, these are huge expenses. That's why I was saying a lot of these people who rent these out or let family live in them, or they live in them themselves, it sits for years. It's out in the heat. It's out in the elements. The tires degrade and they get dry rotted and cracked, and depending on the type of RV, you're talking about 6 to 8 tires. That's a lot of money right there. Just to replace that many tires is not cheap, let alone the damage that the RV incurs just from sitting. And that's why you can get some for very cheap, because the people selling them don't want to fix them up. They don't know how to fix them up. And oftentimes they need to move. And so they have to sell it. So it's a fire sale, essentially. But it'll cost a fair amount to fix up. Not to buy it initially, but to fix up.
Have you thought of going back to China? It's been 14 years in China. I don't know if that's true, but I think you liked it in China. But why did you leave? Was it because the government was cracking down on foreigners?
Okay. Yes, let me get into that. Yeah, so thanks for circling back to that. So when I was in my 30s, I had a friend. He lived overseas in China. And I was working here in America, but I'd always wanted to live overseas. And some things happened that, you know, made me want to get out of here even more. And he says to me, you know, things are pretty good over here. I've got a business over here I'm working on. And, you know, I think it'd be right up your alley. I could use some help with this. And so I was like, okay. Why not? I mean, the dollar is worth 8 times there what it is here. I have copious amounts of savings. I'm a young guy. I've always been careful with my money, so I can live like a king over there. And he painted a pretty good picture. And so I moved over there, and we went into business together. It was a really good business. I ended up actually building it up much more than he did, and then when he wanted to leave, I bought him out, and it was a very successful business. It did very well for quite a long time, and then Trump got into office, and it started to go downhill, started to have issues. Shipments ended up sitting in customs for way too long. My operating expenses went, you know, out the wazoo. They were making it very difficult for Americans to operate there. Apple was fine, but small independent operators like myself, they wanted to drive out. And then, late 2019, they started gearing up for their fake demic BS. The coofity coof BS. The scam demic, as I like to call it. And they wanted to get it. You got to understand about the Chinese, they're very collectivist in their mindset. If you're an American, you're America. You're not an individual. You're a part of that group, and they're going to discriminate against you just based on that factor. Anybody knows anything about Chinese, they're some of the most racist people in the world. If you go by that definition, they're certainly some of the most collectivist in the world, if not the most collectivist. And so they don't view you as an individual. You represent your country. And if they don't like America, they don't like you. Chinese propaganda to this day is very anti-American, but back during Trump's first term especially. And so it became impossible. I was making 6 figures a year. I was doing very well. I had a great life. It was wonderful. And I'd also been successful in my life before that back here in America. I didn't leave these states due to any financial reasons. So for a long, long time, for almost 40 years, you know, I did very well. For myself, a very productive member of society, you could say, with great accuracy. And I loved it, but it became impossible to operate. Now, I went from making X amount well into the black to making Y amount well into the red. And it just became impossible to operate. And so I had to sell the business to a Chinese fella. Not going to get into that. That's a whole nother story. He started having some problems with logistics, so I stayed on in a logistics role until, I think it was around March of last year or so, for quite some time after I sold the business to him. But once that ended, that was when I decided to move to Montana. And then, of course, the rest is history. But if I could have stayed, I would have. I'd love to go back someday. There's really problems, though, with that. China's economy right now is in the toilet, thanks to the horrendous management of the CCP. Don't know what the hell they're doing. It's a mess. It's a disaster. I don't think I could I don't think I wouldn't want to try to start another business there right now. Maybe someday I'll go back when I retire, potentially. But not right now. No, not possible at this time.
Have you thought of going to Vietnam? I went to Vietnam, and I think Vietnam is going to be China number two in a way.
I've thought about a number of scenarios moving overseas. There's a couple issues. Number one, the illness that I suffered, it's created a significant amount of impediments. I don't have the stamina, I don't have the energy, I don't have the requisite health to start another business. The amount of, or build a business up, the amount of time, the amount of work, I'm just too old and I'm too sick. It's not something I can do. Insofar as moving overseas to like work, generally speaking, the only people that can get jobs as expats overseas have to be in some kind of academic field. And so something like the type of work that I would be doing, it's not really something that there's a lot of, and even I can't do that work anymore here, so how could I do it over there? So the ability to make a living and survive overseas, it's the same issue as here. So it's the similar roadblocks as to here. The work that I can do here, I couldn't do over there. The work that I'm able to do right now, it's the only work I've found that I can do, and even I can't even do that in any more than a rather limited fashion. And even then, it's seasonal. 9 months of the year, I could break even now, but I've hit this three-month period that I didn't even know about because I've never done this type of work before. And so that's why I'm in the situation I am right now where I'm doing the fundraiser. But honestly, I haven't seen improvement in my health in 3 months, 4 months now. In fact, like I said before, I feel worse, not better. So hence the fundraiser, because I have to make some kind of change to my living environment, or I'm not going to have a life, literally.
Speaking of life, everybody at a young age has a path that, whether they know it or not, they go on. What led you down that path probably a long time ago when you were probably 6-7 years old, got you onto the red pill as well? Because I think you're here because of a lot of life that may or may not happen to you consciously or subconsciously, but something led you down a path that got you to the red pill and got you to where you are today, at least before the accident.
You're not wrong. You are correct. So I think a lot of people grow up in a rather normal environment. Average environment, parents that have a base level of concern for your existence. They do more than just, you know, feed and clothe you. They actually have some concern for you and care that you exist and have some kind of desire for you to continue to do so. But my upbringing was very, very different. Both of my parents were narcissists. I don't use that word lightly. They were actual narcissists, very self-centered individuals who felt the world revolved around them, and they didn't really care about anybody else except themselves. So everybody around them is nothing more than an extension of themselves. And my parents were extremely neglectful. You could put it mildly. They didn't really much care that I existed. And the only time that they paid any attention was if I did something wrong. And this was a problem because that was intruding upon their time, their attention. And so I learned very quickly about the harsh side of reality. And so I guess there's a red pilling aspect to that, insofar as the harsh realities of the world. Insofar as the red pill about relationships with the opposite sex, sort of kind of something that got me to want to get out of here. So I did have a very long-term relationship. It was, 10 years. that really red-pilled me. Because that chick, she wasted a lot of my time, a lot of my life. You know, we got together. We were together a long period of time. Moved in together. We actually bought a house together. We were going to have a family. We were going to do the whole, you know, white picket fence and everything else. And then, I mean, we had the same values and virtues. Everything matched up. We wanted the same things until we didn't. At first, yeah, we wanted the same things. And we're of an age that, you know, hey, you know, those things aren't going to be changing, right? Well, they did with her. She got, I guess you could use the word term bored. I don't know. She wanted something different, something spicier, something that was, you know, I really don't know. But her desires, her wants, her values changed. She went from wanting a family and kids and, you know, a legacy and grandkids to, oh, well, you know, my career, my job. She got promoted and she wanted to move up the corporate ladder and, you know, get more accolades professionally and make more money and be that independent boss bee that we all know so well. And she went from being a woman that I knew well to somebody I didn't know. It was like I thought I knew this person. And then over the course of a few years, she became somebody else entirely. And, you know, by that time, over 10 years had passed, she'd, you know, wasted my best years. And I love how people online talk about how men do this. Oh, how men are just they're wasting so many women's time and their best years. Yeah, the top 10% of guys. That's it. Guys like me, though, no. I'm getting my time wasted. And now I'm into my 30s, and so that experience red-pilled me quite a bit, and really put me off of long-term relationships. And the final nail in the coffin was a relationship I had in China that maybe I can get into, maybe not. But yeah, I've definitely had a lot of experiences along the way that have red pilled me. I didn't just end up at the red pill for no reason. It was life experiences.
The lady that you spent with 10 plus years, was she Chinese or another ethnicity?
No, white lady. She was just, you know, she's a white lady. Yeah. Yeah, that was here in America. I met somebody else in China, but she wasn't really a real authentic individual either. And I kind of actually knew it from the start. So I didn't really take her very seriously because I just knew that she had ulterior motives from the get-go. So, yeah.
Would you say that your life was traumatic? And if so, what made it to be traumatic?
Early on, yeah, I mean, my childhood definitely would be considered so, although I didn't view it that way at the time because I didn't really have a point of comparison. I figured everybody had similar types of upbringing as I did. I didn't really know that, okay, this is not normal. I didn't learn that until later on in my childhood. But, yeah, it was very traumatic. I mean, looking back, yeah, it definitely was. But as far as how it impacted me, it just educated me as to how the world actually worked. I didn't look at it as traumatic. I looked at it as a learning experience instead of it being something that damaged me and held me back in life. I chose to see it as a learning experience. And so that's exactly what I did. I suppose that's part of why I am a philosopher. I didn't really have much choice in the matter. A lot of people choose to be. I really kind of didn't, I suppose.
So one of the things that I really wanted to talk about in that particular case of yours, especially with China, because I want to go to the Orient, I want to be... Did you ever experience any negativity from the people, because you said, you know, they call you Miguarin, right? American Miguarin, something like that, because I...
Oh, Weigarin, yeah, Weigarin, yeah. Weigarin, yeah, foreign devil, yeah.
Oh, really? They call you the white devil? Oh, wow. Did anybody call you the white devil like their men?
Well, not in English, but I believe that's what... No, I mean, generally speaking, the Chinese are very friendly people, curious. It depends on what's... Even in a first-tier city like Shenzhen, which is where I lived, most people there have never had a conversation with the foreigner. Now, they're more common in a first-tier city, so you're not going to have people following you around and flocking around you like you would in a small rural village, which is also an interesting experience. You get to sort of kind of feel what it's like to be a celebrity. It's interesting, and they're very friendly, and their curiosity isn't in any way malicious. I found Chinese people to be very open and honest and quite friendly and intellectually curious in a way that you don't find in America. And I have an appreciation for intellectual curiosity. It represents a want and a desire to learn and educate oneself that I appreciate and value. So it never bothered me, and I always enjoyed people's curiosity. And there's a lot of English speakers there, so I got to have a lot of interesting conversations. And I found it to be very refreshing as compared to the sort of kind of jaded attitudes you find in the West, where everybody's been there, done that. You've got this mixed culture we have here where people don't have too much curiosity about the rest of the world. You're constantly confronted with differences and diversity. So people in the West, generally speaking, become jaded to other ways of life. But the Chinese, they live such an insular, homogenous, one culture existence, that they have a very genuine curiosity about the rest of the world that's refreshing to me.
Okay, so they're not like these people who are going to throw you with the tomatoes and tar and feather you and all that stuff.
No, they're quite nice people. Now, granted, I have had run-ins with, you know, not-so-polite Chinese. I mean, there have been times where I just want to be left alone and... You got some dude with his kid trying to bother me and get my attention so I can be a dancing monkey for his kid and, you know, satiate his kid's curiosity. And I'm like, try to ignore the guy, and then he wants to get into a fist fight with me. I had that happen once or twice, but it's not common. Most Chinese are generally polite and... And nice people. I really enjoyed it there. I would have stayed if I could have.
Yeah, but it's because of the Trump and the business going down that really made you come back, huh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had a, you know, the problem is here in America, for example, what people don't understand is it's easier. Now, this is what's scary. It's easier to open and run a business in a communist country than in America. Now, think about that.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, Colombia is also, in a way, a communist country. And I already have an SAS, which is their version of an LLC. And it is a lot easier, quicker, and it's more streamlined to open a business in Colombia than here in America.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I mean, we were based out of Hong Kong for shipping. I lived in Shenzhen. It was very easy to cross over to Hong Kong. The reason for that was there's far less regulations in Hong Kong. It's very easy to maintain the business there. I really didn't have any issues. If you're a foreigner there, because you got to remember, communist countries do not incentivize hard work. You're not going to get people striving stand out. I mean, it doesn't matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter how much merit you have. Everybody's getting paid the same. Everybody's getting treated the same. It's a little bit of quality. So they don't give a crap. And so, you know, they don't want to deal with foreigners and the extra headaches and the paperwork. So they generally leave you alone if you're a foreigner. And unless you are doing something heinously egregious and really causing a lot of problems, they don't bother you. And so I found that environment very conducive to doing business. And I didn't really have any issues until my last, in that regard, until my last year, when they really started harassing me when I tried to cross over to Hong Kong. And it just started having issues going back and forth. And I mean, this was in addition to the problems I had already had from these pinheads with holding up shipments. And then meanwhile, I talked to friends of mine who were in a similar business, but they're Australian. And, you know, oh, no, we don't have any problems. Or they're from the UK. No, it was only people that were my fellow Americans when I talked to them. They're like, yeah, for some reason, they're causing me problems as well. Like, whatever they can do to cause issues with my business here, they're doing it. It's almost as if they want to get all the Americans out of the country, which is exactly what they wanted. And then later on with the coofity-coof scam-demic, fake-demic BS, they got most of the other foreigners out as well. They started with the Americans, but they didn't finish with them. There were about 650,000 expats in China. Now it's less than half that. So they wanted to get rid of the foreign influence, which they were blaming for some of their issues with controlling their population. Turns out they're just bad at, communists are just bad at running things. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine communists not being that good at management and stuff like that. Now, what are your future? Now, I mean, taking away your current medical condition.
I should have. The truth of the matter is, I should have never come back to America.
Yeah.
After I left China, that was my big mistake. I could have went anywhere, and the work I was doing was remote.
Figure out that once, because I mean I never been in your situation. That's why I'm lost at words. I never been in your situation. Like I'm gonna be going back to Colombia on Friday or Saturday. In your current situation now, the most important thing for you short term would be acquiring the RV. Healing, and then afterwards, see what you can probably do to take your life to the next level. That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. You know, I have to address things in the proper order. So, one, I've really got to reduce my living expenses, and the most effective way to do that is to get out of this place and into something that is far more affordable on a monthly basis. And that way it takes a lot of pressure off. I don't need to kill myself so much to get by. And then I might actually be able to start to recuperate and also at the same time qualify for some kind of disability. And I really don't like that idea, honestly. I don't like any of it. It's just the reality of the situation that I'm in, and if and when my health ever does improve enough, then I'd love to get out of that situation. And if I qualify for that, then I'd like to just get off it. I just want to get better so that I can get back to work. But at the same time, I'm kind of getting old here. I mean, I'm not that far from you know, considering and thinking about and possibly retiring anyway. But that's not something that's close enough to be an option either, time-wise. I may not even live that long. It'd be nice if I did. But right now, I just have to worry about reducing my expenses and getting into a situation where I'm not in such a difficult position and I have a little bit of breathing room so I can maybe recuperate because I feel like garbage. 24/7. It's not fun.
I can hear you kind of breathing. I know you're trying to do your best to, you know, maintain frame, but I can hear the breathing and you're really, like, running out of breath every now and then.
Yeah, my cardio is not what it used to be. I tried to go out walking the other day, and it was like, I took my heart rate monitor, I was looked at it, and I was like, what? My heart rate is what? I was like, after 10 minutes of walking, it was just too much. I don't think what people, you know, actually understand. I mean, it's not an exaggeration when I say that my physical health is extremely bad and that I should be on disability. It's actually, I'm understating the severity of my current health status. But, you know, there's really not much I can do, so I just have to. That's why I said the current work I found that that I can do, it's really the only work I've found that I can do. And it wasn't really a and I was feeling pretty good there, because for a few months I was doing all right, and then I had reached a certain point where I'm like, okay, I think I've really got the hang of this, and then it dropped off a cliff, and I started talking to other people doing it, and they're like, oh yeah, didn't you know it's the dead time here, it's this seasonal, didn't you know that? It's like, no, I didn't. Oh, okay, well now you do. Well, a little late now, because I was just so focused on get up, work, 6 days, 7 days, getting up, 3-4 in the morning, work, do as much as humanly possible, come home, collapse, repeat. That's all I can do. I have no energy for anything else, and so I didn't know. And now I'm in this conundrum here.
Because I know you said that you at one point were a really good at fencing. So in that case, your health, your cardio, your stamina had to be like A1. How far away are you now from what you were at your best before this happened as a top fencing person?
Good question. I wish the answer was far, far. It's like a night and day difference. I always was very, I have good genetics, I think. I was always very, I had a lot of stamina. If I recall, like when I was 10 years old, there was a cancer fundraiser. I used to love to roller skate. There was a skating rink close to our home. And, you know, when I was a kid, skating was big. I mean, now who the hell goes roller skating? Are there skating rinks anymore? I don't see any. But when I was a kid, it was a big deal. And I remember there was like this 100-mile skate-a-thon, right? Where you literally, for every mile, like you would go and people would pledge. Like if they pledged like a penny, they would have to donate one penny per mile. And I remember going around to all the, I was 10 years old. I remember going around to all the houses in our neighborhood. And getting people to pledge based on how many miles I skated. And there were a lot of angry people because back when I was a kid, $1 was a lot of money. And I had some people that donated 5 cents. And they were pissed because I went back with proof that I actually skated 100 miles in 10 hours when I was 10 years old.
Wow. 100 miles in 10 hours.
Yeah. And they were pissed because they were like, I had one guy arguing with me and negotiating. He was like, well, hey, come on now. I mean, can't you take $1? It's like, dude, you got your signature right here. You pledged a nickel. I skated 100 miles. You got to give me $5. He was like angry, trying to negotiate it down with me. It's like, hey, man, a deal's a deal. You pledged a nickel for every mile. Well, I did 100 miles. You got to give me $5. They were really like pissed off. But, you know, I think I raised a couple $100, which at that time was a lot of money. So, I mean, I was always very, had a lot of stamina. So it's been hard, man. It's been real hard. I can't even do that stuff hardly at all. I'm just focused, like, it's all I can do just to go and work a few hours a day. And I come home, and I just don't have the juice for anything anymore. It's just work and then collapse. And the only reason I can do this live stream today is because the work has dropped off a cliff, and so there's nothing for me to do today. So I've got some extra energy, so I could do this live stream with you, but otherwise I wouldn't have the juice. I would have to choose between the two, which is why I haven't been making content. Choose between making content from a YouTube channel or making money. Whatever money I can make. Well, I got to choose the money.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing you brought up about YouTube. I heard they let you back on, but they're shadow banning you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the correct euphemisms. I don't know the right words. I mean, I'll say effinism, but they already have that. You know, their AI already recognizes that. I mean, I use all the wrong words, and I still curse, and I haven't made any content really in the past 6-7 months anyway. So even though I was able to get back on last year, I haven't added much to my content library there thanks to my illness. But if I do try to post, yeah, they shadow ban me. And my account has been marked and shadow banned since 2017. So even though I was able to get my suspension lifted over a year ago, the shadow banning, you know, the reduction of my content showing up, the algorithm suppressing me, that never went away. So, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be big on YouTube. Let's just say that.
So how are you doing on BitChute, Rumble? I think that's the only things out there other than MGTOW TV and YouTube now.
I don't know, because I haven't produced content in the past 7 months. I mean, before that, I would get views in maybe the hundreds on BitChute. Rumble, no, I can't get views on Rumble. Rumble is not the kind of free speech platform people think it is. They shadow ban plenty of people there. They suppress a lot of content production there. It's not really the open-air a market of ideas that people think it is. I really can't get much traction. And that's why I've decided to... and also, the red pill content creation market is kind of saturated. So that's why that's part of why I decided to really change direction. If I do continue creating content, I want to write a book... specifically addressing my philosophical school and my approach to philosophy and how it can be used and how it's supposed to be used to address and solve real-world problems. I want to help my fellow man, men and women. It just so happens that it's mostly men that ingest the kind of content I produce, to find meaning and purpose and maximize the fulfillment and happiness in their lives, no matter what kind of obstacles they might encounter. And so that is where my main content creation focus would lie now, if and when I actually find the time and the energy to be able to do that, which is another reason that I need support from people out there. Well, the reason I need the support of my followers isn't just... Well, it is mainly because, you know, I don't want to, I want to actually continue living, but I want to continue living so I can pen my thoughts, my philosophy, leave it for future generations so that, you know, things I have to teach outlive me, that they continue on into future generations. And I'd like to write my book. I want it to be, publish it as an audiobook and perhaps a weekly a chapter each week, and of course I'll also have it in text form that people can download. I want to offer to people for free so that they can learn the things that I've learned from the hardships I've experienced, but not have to go through those things themselves.
So compared to last year, how do you see the future of the Manosphere Red Pill? Did it improve, or is it the same old, and probably getting worse, but people are making money like ants with Tate?
That's a good, that's an interesting question. Do I see things improving? Honestly, I think in terms of things for men, now this may not be popular, but I don't see things getting better for men in the short or even midterm. I think things are going to continue to degrade. They're going to continue to get worse. Trump being elected isn't going to change anything. Trump is not some kind of pro-male advocate. He's a little more fiscally responsible and realistic and not so irresponsible as Joe Biden was, but he's not going to solve men's problems. We're going to have to do that for ourselves. That's another reason I want to write my book and get the information out there to allow men to find purpose and meaning in their lives without the normal, orthodox, mainstream route that the powers that be want you to take, which, by the way, is to a man's detriment. And I want to give men the tools to achieve happiness and fulfillment without going down that route. Because right now, going down that route is bad for men. It's not a good choice. But we need to have purpose in our lives so that we can find meaning and fulfillment. And we need to know how to be happy within ourselves, alone. And so that's another reason I want to get the information out there, get back to creating content, which is just not something I can do right now. But I don't think the outlook for men is good, and I don't see things getting better. They're only going to get worse, and that's by design, by the way. Okay, there's a reason that they want you to eat the bugs and live in pods and own nothing and be happy. And I don't see that trend changing anytime soon, and I haven't seen Trump or anybody else in power and authority doing anything that would change that. I don't see him abolishing the Federal Reserve. I don't see him getting us off of the fiat currency that enslaves us to international bankers. I don't see him doing any of that, and he's not. So until things like that start happening, no, I don't see a bright future for men, at least not in the West. That's why I advocate men get the hell out of the West and go elsewhere.
Another subject, I don't know if you know this or not, but are you aware that I officially started a MGTOW party in the state of Florida?
Oh, no, I didn't know anything about that. Please, do tell.
Yeah, we officially have a MGTOW party in the state of Florida. I mean, if you go to the state of Florida's website, if you go on Google, you type in Florida political party MGTOW, we're gonna actually show up. So we are a legit party in the state of Florida. I'm going to be, God willing, of course, I'm going to be creating a MGTOW national committee to oversee all these MGTOW parties. And the thing is, you can actually create a MGTOW party in pretty much any state. It doesn't cost money. It's totally free. You don't need official forms or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
All you need is probably two other people, because it's a party. You need to have three or more people. You need to have a chairman, co-chairman, and a treasurer / secretary. And even at that, it can be as long as, they're willing to. And there is no negative consequences to any of these people, you know. As long as they're willing to sign their name, that's it. And then after that, you can rotate them on out. You just need two other people to get it established with the government, and then you can, rotate them out.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so, almost every state is like Florida, where it's, because that's part of the democratic process, they just can't say, oh, well, you're MGTOW, we're not gonna, let you, a lot of people told me, Amar, Florida is not gonna allow you to have a MGTOW party. Well, there it is, so that's part of the democratic process. And the good thing is, because, the Jews, they pretty much destroyed MGTOW online. Not many people know what MGTOW is, so they're like, we're just going to approve it. So So my game plan, honestly, is to grow MGTOW in as many states as possible.
Well, that's good. And, you know, everything has to start somewhere. And start small, grow bigger. I mean, I noticed this trend as well. When I started producing content back in 2016, they were doing everything they could to get me banned, suspended from YouTube. Now they just don't care because they've had all the time they need to poison the well and control the narrative and paint the red pill and the manosphere in a particular light to such an extent where if anybody hears those words in conjunction with your name or anything you have to say, they just don't really take you so seriously anymore. And so I've seen this trend a long time now, and it's good you're doing something to counter that and to fight back. Like I said, it's going to take a long time, though, to grow the ranks, but everything's got to start somewhere.
Exactly. So, you know, we just planted the seeds, and I'm also going to open a forum for MGTOW. I used to have a forum called MGTOW Cafe like 4 or 5 years ago. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing the restaurant and putting it on autopilot, is so I can, you know, go back to MGTOW, go back to the party, focus more on that rather than working on a food truck from, you know, 12 hours a day.
Yeah, that sucks. I wouldn't want to, I couldn't do that now. Yeah, I guess there are limitations health-wise, but if I didn't have those kind of issues, I don't. Yeah, that doesn't sound very fun.
No, working. I love cooking. I love dealing with the customer, but working 12 plus hours a day, even with a regular restaurant, working 12, 13 hours a day, man, that's just really that's your entire life right there, you know.
Oh, I know. I used to do it. I did it for, you know, so many. Almost 40 years. I know what it's like. It's not a lot of fun, you know. And I'm at a point in my life where I shouldn't have to, but what does shouldn't mean? That's what does that mean? Shouldn't and the dime doesn't get you anything anymore. So there's what should be the case, or there's oughts, and then there's the is. And the is is, you know, no, don't have that luxury, unfortunately. Wish it did. Maybe I should, depending on your point of view, but I don't, so yeah, what are you gonna do?
Let me ask you this question. You don't have to say the state that you're in, but is it good for business? I mean, is the hourly wage, you know, something like $11, $12, not $20? I mean, I'm all, yeah.
So it depends. Like, the work itself isn't really like hourly, so it's like per job, and so per customer, and then it, you know, it averages out. But you're essentially, it's like independent contractor type of work. So it's not actually that good, honestly. I mean, you could get that sense by when I said I was just barely managing to break even, and only for about a month. And then the rest of the time I was losing money the entire time. So it just reached a point where I could see myself maybe breaking even, and then it dropped off the cliff. So it's not really good work. So it's just something that I've been doing until I hoped I could my health would reach a point where I could get back to something more lucrative. But that hasn't manifested, unfortunately. Not because of any lack of desire on my part. It's just my health. It's just, it hasn't improved. It's gotten worse. So.
So, at this point, I would imagine that you probably already know what would be your best interest. I'm going to say that this accident threw a curveball at you. And once, God willing, you overcome it, you'll be able to take your life to the next level, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as just a road bump, a big one, and eventually I'll be able to overcome it. And everything I'm doing right now is just an attempt to buy time And it just hopefully, you know, reach a point where I'm better and I can be back in the driver's seat, as it were, where I don't have it impeding me. So, yeah, I'm really just trying to, and I'm being up, I guess maybe that's being optimistic. I don't know about that. I do see myself eventually maybe getting back potentially at least somewhere near physically where I was prior to the accident. But I don't base my happiness or contentment on that being the case, because ultimately I don't have control over that. And in truth, none of us have control. That's an illusion. The only thing that we can do is make choices, and those choices will be good or bad. And so I'm just trying to make the choices right now that will get me to a point where I can be back on my feet enough to where I don't have all these worries, and I don't really need to be asking anybody for any kind of assistance of any kind. So yeah, I mean, that's where I am at this time. I'm just trying to make the best choices I can and do everything I possibly can to not be a burden on anybody and just be self-reliant and be back on my feet as I have been the majority of my life. And this has just been very demoralizing this past 10 months. Yeah.
So this accident has been going on. We spoke in August. So was the accident before August? I think the accident was before August, right?
July. It was mid-July. Yeah, of last year.
And it was a biking accident. I believe you fell in a pothole or you fell in something.
I was just walking and there was a big hole in the ground with a metal rod sticking out of it. That poked through my right leg just above my knee.
And there wasn't anybody who can be held liable for that?
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, it's just, no. Long and short of it, no.
And that is tough. But you sound like you're in good spirits. Are you in good spirits? Right now you sound a little bit winded because this conversation has been going on for 2 hours. But soul-wise, are you in a good place right now?
Yes. Again, I mean, just that's part of being a philosopher. You, it's not going to solve your problems to be letting the situation externally affect you to such an extent where you can't think clearly. Just focusing on the problem is not going to help you. I simply focus on a solution, and I bend whatever energy I have to finding solutions to the problem instead of focusing on the problem itself. Because that's when you get into trouble. That's where you end up in a rut that you can't get out of. When you focus on and obsess over the problem itself, that solves nothing. It doesn't help anything. Letting yourself, making yourself, choosing to be depressed, choosing to become demoralized, and letting your current life situation affect you in a negative way to where you cannot get yourself out of this hole. If you're in a hole, instead of actually figuring out a way to get out of it, you're focusing on the problem, and then you're just digging the hole deeper. So, no, that's not the way I have lived my life. I've always focused on the solution to a problem when they present themselves, not just choosing to wallow in my own misery. And it'd be easy to do that, but it wouldn't solve anything. So no, I'm in a pretty good headspace, but I'm always in a good headspace. It doesn't really matter how bad things get externally. Now, if things were to get bad externally, if I were to like end up on the street, I would not long survive because I wouldn't be able to maintain my ability to produce and provide enough income just to pay for the medications that are keeping me alive. But it wouldn't cause me to become like depressed or feel terrible because that's just not the way I approach life. Even though I would die, I would still be in a good headspace, if that makes any sense. I'd be in a good headspace until I was dead. Okay? So, I hope that explains it.
The last question before we wrap this up. How are things going on with Stephen Molyneux?
Stephen Molyneux? Oh my God, yeah. I haven't heard that name in a while. I know, geez. The last time I spoke to him was back when I had the accident and connected with him briefly. And, you know, he offered to give me some charity if I had in the past advocated for him when he got booted off of YouTube. It was a very odd conversation we had. There hasn't been any communication between him and I, which I guess kind of is odd because... maybe to yourself or others out there, because we're quite similar and we're very close in age and life circumstances and our approach to life and the way that we think and our approach to the world and our philosophical viewpoints. But no, we've never really communicated in any meaningful way. We've had like a few back and forth emails and but no, we're not in communication. I've never really tried to get in touch with him in any meaningful way, except for like back when the accident occurred. And after that and the way that he responded, I just had no real interest. I don't know if you've ever spoken to him. I know you're a fan of his, which is fine. He's produced some good work for sure. I don't agree with everything that he says. He's had some... interesting takes on male-female dynamics, and I don't agree with his view on the red pill, let alone MGTOW. His views on those things are not positive, by the way, from what I've seen and heard. But I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't say that, oh, well, you know, because he's had some takes I don't agree with, that doesn't mean that I discount his body of work, which is quite extensive, and... it is inspirational to a lot of people and has, I'm sure, led many people down a more philosophically minded path in the positive. So my general view of him as a person and a philosopher is a good one, though I don't personally care for the fellow. I don't let that taint my professional view of his philosophical endeavors, which I think are very impressive.
Because I've been watching, I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of his, but I've been watching some of his videos. I replicate his channel on MGTOW TV. I think he's, even though he's not pro-MGTOW, he's really coming to the conclusion that you just can't have women in power or authority, and that you need to limit their rights, especially with OnlyFans. So he may not like MGTOW, but he's already spouting our principles, whether he likes it or not, whether he knows it or not. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, let me ask you this last question before we wrap this down. Sure. Do you think a lot of men out there are becoming MGTOW, but they don't even know it?
Becoming MGTOW. So I think more men are starting to become aware of the perils of getting into serious relationships with Western women. Now, whether or not they are going their own way in the sense that they've decided to forego marriage and having children with Western women, that's another question. I think more than used to. Enough to change things currently? No. But I do think more people are, and insofar as limiting rights of women and putting limitations, I think that goes for both genders. I think we live in far too liberal of a world right now where we don't have enough boundaries and limitations. This extreme freedom that is pushed by liberalism and that many people tout as the best aspect of America, this liberty, I don't think it's a good thing. I think we need more limitations on personal freedom for both men and women. Legally, for sure, and certainly stigma-wise in regards to society. And of course, the powers that be want to destroy those limitations and those boundaries because they want to destroy Western civilization. But I say bring back Christianity, bring back Christian ethics. You don't need to necessarily be a religious person to see the positives, the net gain that comes from these religious institutions. It's a heck of a lot better than this extreme liberation and freedom that we have right now that puts no boundaries whatsoever on human behavior and is sort of kind of a satanic approach to life that just says, do what thou wilt. It doesn't even include the caveat, harm no one else, even though the so-called harm principle seems to be the main way that people go about living their lives these days. Well, you know, as long as what I do doesn't harm anybody else, you know, I can do what I want. Well, okay, so what do you mean harm somebody else? Directly? What about indirectly? Oh, well, that's not anything that's ever brought up. And by the way, you don't know, you haven't really thought deeply enough about the direct harm that you may be doing. Okay, you're not stabbing them, shooting them, whacking them in the head with a rock, but that doesn't mean you're not doing harm. Have you stopped to think about how much harm you might actually be doing? The unforeseen consequences to your laissez-faire, free love, do whatever I want attitude? No. People don't think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people out there, they're totally lost. Young women are monetizing themselves. If she's decent looking, she's going to monetize herself by asking men for Cash App donations before they go out. Young men are doing the right thing and walking away from women. I think it's going to get really bad here in America. I don't know what your takes on that are.
Oh, it's going to get real bad. Things are going to collapse. The economy's going to collapse. The dollar's going to collapse. Everything's going to collapse. You can't maintain this fiat currency, print money ad infinitum, you know, empower women, the most easily propagandized, worst decision makers, worst leaders out there to be the ones in the driver's seat. At the same time, have this, you know, print money ad infinitum attitude and not expect things to go into the toilet. They're going to crash. The economy is going to crash. Everything is going to crash. It's going to be worse than the Titanic. So, yeah. Do people think things are bad now? Wait. You ain't seen nothing yet. Okay? It's going to get much worse.
That's really scary. And also, at the same time, I'm happy that I already got something going on in Colombia.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating by August, I think the restaurant should be fully paying for itself by August, which is like 2 months from now. That way, if anything happens here in America, I got Colombia I can always go to. The food truck here in America, my parents bought it for me. We own the land the truck is on, so we pay no rent. Only thing I have to pay for is food and the guy who works on the truck. And we're going to be targeting the Hispanic community because the guy that's going to be working on the truck is going to be Guatemalan. So I think I'm pretty good here. I think I'm going to be, God willing, pretty good in Colombia. I mean, as far as I know, I think I'm the only person in the MGTOW community or maybe the greater manosphere who actually made it work overseas, because everybody else I know, whether it's Better Bachelor, Fresh and Fit, their entire wealth is dedicated on social media.
And that's going to crash too. You can't rely on the manosphere to be your source of income. And I mean, you can see that with I don't call him Better, I call him Butter, because you know, he's gotten quite pudgy. He even shifted. He even shifted his focus and went to being more of a political commentator. Now he tries to avoid the red pill and the manosphere and discussing it because he sees where the tides are changing, where the wind is blowing. And I think a lot of other creators are going to do that as well. They're going to ride the wave until it crashes against the cliffs. and it dries up entirely. My content creation was never really about that, though. I never made any real money doing it. I made a little back in 2016, but I was doing very well for my business overseas. It wasn't anything I entered into for monetary gain, but simply to spread my philosophy, practical realism to as many people as possible, and to try and help my fellow men. That was the only, my fellow human beings. I would love if I had more women listening to what I have to say, but unfortunately there aren't that many. But help my fellow man to wake up and live their lives in a way that is the most purposeful and fulfilling for a woman. That would be, having kids and, playing into the ontology of what makes a woman. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. I can't beat the social conditioning and the propaganda that has been going on for the past 60 years. It's hard to beat with men, too, but it's less difficult than the women. So I'm going to have at least some success speaking to men. So let's try. Well, I try to focus. And that was only ever my goal. Why I'm shifting gears now, and I'd like to produce more philosophically based content instead of just focusing on relationship dynamics. But I can only do that if you guys out there can support my work and enable me to, actually get back to content creation, which I'd love to do. But right now, the situation I'm in now precludes that, unfortunately.
Yeah, for everybody watching this video, guys, here's a link to the GoFundMe. It's going to be in the description. I'm going to pin it in the comment section. TRP said, a decent RV that will get him to relax. That way he can make a comeback. That way he can come back focused into the MGTOW community. Because honestly, I miss watching his videos. Like I said, I actually reached out to him a couple of months ago. Like, hey man, where are you, man? I'm missing your videos. And I think a lot of us miss his videos. So if we can get his campaign, what is the campaign price? 5K, 6K, I believe, something of that sort.
I think it was at 6.5. Okay, yeah. If I could get a fraction of that, I'd be happy, to be honest. If I had the kind of views I had back in 2016, I'm sure I would have surpassed that. But past glories aside, I'd be happy with just a fraction. If I could just get the RV, just a little, even a fraction of that amount would certainly help. I wouldn't immediately be able to fix it up, but it would at least allow me to own the cheap. So whatever you can contribute is greatly appreciated. Any amount, guys. So if you can't, but if you can and you feel predisposed to do so, please do. I do like to think that people do miss my content creation. I don't know. I sometimes ask myself that.
Oh, we do. Trust me, we do. And as you guys know, in the MGTOW community, guys, literally every dollar we make from you goes to something. When you guys helped me out to the restaurant in Colombia, I showed you literally where every dollar went. So you guys know us. The money that we get from you, it actually goes to what we're telling you it's going to go for. We don't play around, That's not how we operate.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that, actually. It didn't occur to me before, but yeah, I'd be happy to show receipts, specifically what it's for, if I need to get a water pump, if I need to get a radiator, if I need to replace the AC, if I need to get a new fuel pump. A lot of these RVs need a new fuel pump. I would be willing to provide receipts for everything. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. All right. So is there anything else we haven't touched upon, or anything that just came to your mind that we should talk about?
No, I suppose not. I pretty much covered a lot of stuff. Like I said, I like to think that people perhaps miss my content. I always wanted to. The content that I enjoy creating most, actually, was way back in the day when I would do scripted pieces, when I would sit down, and you can still find some of them if you go back in my content 7-8 years back, where I speak specifically about how to be happy, subjects like selfishness and how it's actually a good thing. So you can find some of those pieces if you go back far, but I felt that there wasn't a lot of interest in the things I actually was most passionate about creating. So I did kind of let myself get steered off course from what was actually more important work, which was philosophically educating my audience and teaching them the lessons that I've learned throughout my life, applying philosophy and the things that I've suffered so that you guys don't have to. And I kind of let myself get steered by the winds of popularity of certain, you know, just content creation, you know, dunking on the effinist stuff, dunking on the boss babes, making fun of them. And that was enjoyable, but I got deterred from the work that really actually gives my life purpose and brings me meaning, which is creating philosophical content simply because it wasn't all that popular at the time. But just because something's not popular, that doesn't mean it's not more important. And sometimes it's more important than ever because it's not popular, because it's very easy to stuff your face with candy and cream and tasty carbs and sugar, and that's very popular, but it's not very good for you. And the stuff that was really best for my audience, I let myself get deterred from producing that. And now I realize I should have been producing more of that content, the philosophically based stuff, that right now I have nothing more than a strong desire to produce and disseminate. And so that's where I want my focus to be. So if you guys out there can help me out in that regard so I can get back to doing that, I'd really appreciate it. Of course, right now, go ahead.
You brought up an amazing point, because now you got some content creators like myself and maybe even Better Bachelor who are pivoting away from dunking on women. Like I myself, I'm now going into business. I'm now going into politics because that's what's badly needed. Dunking on women isn't going to get you anywhere. I noticed there's a lot of new channels coming out like Homeass, who all they do is dunk on women, and that really has no benefit for young men, because once you understand a woman's nature, it's like, okay dude, let's move on to something bigger, better, something that's actually going to benefit my life long term. So I am very happy to see that you are pivoting more toward philosophy, stoicism, things that are actually going to benefit us more than just dunking on women. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I've been a philosopher. I've been studying philosophy since I was 10 years old. And so it's a passion for my life. It has been for the entirety of it. And so I think it's important because the effinism is nothing more than a symptom of a much larger problem. There's powers out there that don't want you to be in control of your own life. There's powers out there that want to control you and have dominion over you. There's aristocracy out there that's been around for centuries that is still pulling puppet strings and still wants to control your life and still thinks they know what's best for you. And while the way that ways that they manipulate you and their methods may have changed and varied sophistication-wise and method-wise over time, it's still the same powers, and they still want dominion over you, control over you, and they don't want to let go. And so all these things that people are focusing on, like the dunking on the chicks and the making fun of the chicks, and these are symptoms. These are distractions from the actual problems. And so until you start seeing the bigger picture and understanding what's going on below the surface, and that these things are just distractions, they're symptoms, and addressing them isn't going to solve the underlying disease, you're just going to continue to be a pawn in their game. And that's not what I want. I want you to be able to take control of your life. I want you to be able to escape these powers. I want you to be able to stand on your own two feet, be self-sufficient, self-reliant, so you can survive in this new paradigm. Well, they want to control you, and they want you to put yourself into a situation where you are more easily controlled, and you are disempowered and disenfranchised, and women are one of the tools that they use to put you into that situation. So you have to learn how to get out of that, while at the same time find ways to engender your life with purpose and have meaning without the usual mainstream orthodox ways that have been the preferred method for centuries, because you can't take those paths any longer. You got to find a new path, a new way to live your life, but still have meaning, still have purpose, still be happy. And that's part of what my philosophical school, Practical Realism, is about. And that's why I want to continue creating content and write my book, so that you can find a new way, just as I have, and you can be content and happy and have meaning and purpose, even though you might be in the pits of hell and damnation and surrounded by cackling demons and devils and fire. Doesn't bother you. That's what I want to impart to people. That's what I want to give you. And that's why I want to continue creating content. And that's where my focus lies. And so that's where I am in regards to what I want to do for the manosphere. Not dunk on women. It's entertaining, but enough.
Enough. Right now, it's not benefiting anybody anymore at this point. And we got to move on to bigger, better things, because, you know, one of the reasons why I haven't opened a restaurant here in America is I don't know how bad it's going to get, man. I really don't know how bad
it's going to get. Yeah, but some people might call me black-pilled, but really I'm just a realist. A lot of these people who are, you know, your Tim Pools, I call them Tim Fool, all these other people talking about things are getting better and, oh, we're winning, and it's all nonsense. We're not winning anything. If you can get out of America, get out. If you can't get out now, plan. Start saving money. Start thinking about what you can do in other countries. Start thinking about how you can take the human capital you have now and transfer it overseas. And if the human capital that you have now isn't enough of or a specific type that would allow you to do that, get new human capital. Learn skills that will enable you to do that. Find a path that will allow you to get out and make a living overseas, because the West is going to continue to go down, 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 down. It's going to crash. It's going to be worse than the Hindenburg. It's going to be worse than the Titanic. And you don't want to be here when that happens. Trust me. I don't want to be here now.
Yeah, I don't want to be here now myself, man. The only reason I'm here is because I got the food truck here. And the money I make from that food truck and I moonlight with it is enough to help the restaurant in Colombia get going. But once I have that financial freedom, truly have it, I definitely want to expand maybe to Latvia. Yeah, Latvia is really good.
Hungary?
Hungary too. Yeah,
Poland.
I mean, I like Poland. I like the Polish people, but I find Poland to be boring. And no disrespect to the Polish people out there, but their women look kind of like Miss Piggy.
Well, I'm an old guy, so my requirements, my standards are maybe a bit more bland or blasé. But to each his own. To each his own. What I have to say to people, yeah, I'm only here by necessity. My priorities are, put myself into a situation where I can, you know, survive, recover more, get more self-sufficient, be able to produce more, earn more, and then back into a position where I have some more options. And then one of those options, that option will be getting the hell out of here. When I can, as soon as I can.
Yeah, like I said, I think I'm probably one of the first people in the MGTOW, maybe the greater manosphere, who has already gone down that path, and that's what I'm sharing with people right now. In fact, there's a fellow MGTOW here who wants to do the same thing, and he just texted me right now. He's interested in investing in Egyptian shawarma overseas. That way he gets to get some money out of it, without having to do the whole management thing, being over there. Because my whole goal is to put everything I do on autopilot. Mm. Like in Colombia, I have a management team. I have all that stuff over there. So we just really reap the benefits. That's what I'm doing. And like I said, this one MGTOW guy, he wants to get in on it. And, you know, after we end this conversation, I'm going to text him back and be like, once I get this restaurant up and running, done properly, then I will talk to lawyers here in America. And that way we make sure that when we do business right with you in the future, it is done right. You know, a lot of people, not around here, a lot of people, but there are people in MGTOW who like, they want to be like a loose, I don't want to say confederacy. They just want to be a bunch of people on the internet who just comment and watch videos about women, and then that's the end of that. I mean, in the beginning, that's true, but eventually, kind of like the Masons and the Jews, eventually you're going to have your own little economy going on. You know, you just can't be a bunch of people on the internet, and that's the end of that. Eventually, we're going to have to get into politics. Eventually, we're going to have to get into business together for our greater good.
Yeah, there needs to be some kind of in-group preference, and there needs to be some kind of collectivization. And while it is in the nature of man to be more sort of a lone wolf, independent, it's in our evolutionary biology. It's how men have been throughout history. For the majority of our evolution, we were competing against each other. And it's somewhat, it is normal for that to continue into today, normal insofar as it being natural. But we need to start as men seeing that now, with the current state of affairs and how things are so anti-male and anti all the things that give a man's life, that play into his ontology and give his life purpose and meaning, are being attacked and are under assault. We need to recognize that and start to come together and stop this fragmentation that we have within the manosphere now, where everybody's just out for themselves, it seems. And we need to start coming together and collectivizing to some extent. I'm not a commie, but the word for collectivizing, it's not always a bad thing, meaning we're stronger together than we are apart. Yeah. We need to be stop being so fragmented and come together, because the truth of the matter is, you know, that's the only way that men are going to be able to make some kind of headway to righting the ship, as it were.
I totally agree. We need to get together, do things right for ourselves. Even if we have to jump ship and go to another country, hey, so be it. You know, that's the way I see it. You know, if you can live in Colombia, you can live in Egypt. Now, me personally, and I know we're going to wrap this up really soon, I personally have an affinity for Europe. Colombia just does not have the type of charm that Latvia has, for example. So while Colombia might be good for business and stuff like that, maybe living in a European country like Montenegro, Latvia, would be a good thing. And a lot of MGTOW men out there, they never left America, you know? They never left the West. Like, I don't know about you, but I want to give these guys, like, I want to broaden their horizon. This is why when I travel all over the world, I take videos of wherever I go. Now, I would not recommend Dominican Republic under any circumstance. Mexico is kind of dangerous with the cartels knocking on your door. Colombia is a little bit dangerous. In fact, I had a Colombian guy pull up a knife on me a couple of days ago, but it was like a small knife, and the guy literally was like 5'3". So it was like, really, dude, really you want to do this, you know? But I'm still alive, obviously. But we got to start showing the MGTOW community that, hey, man, you just got to get out of this rut that you're in, dude. Like, for me, Latvia literally was like a mystical, magical place. It was like a fairy tale, like the way the country looked, man. So we just got to show these MGTOW guys out there that there's better stuff overseas. You lived overseas. Let me ask you this question. Now, you did, I know I've been saying we're going to end this for the past half hour, but this will be the last question.
Okay.
Would you say that to you, China is probably better off than America for living and doing business?
Yeah, and the reason for that is because the truth of the matter is, in many ways, America is very anti-business. There's too much cronyism going on here. We don't actually have capitalism. People like to say we have capitalism and that what we're experiencing now is the death of capitalism, but it's actually a cronyist system. It's never been a capitalist system, and it's just become ever more cronyistic the larger that the government has come, which government just want to do. It just gets bigger and bigger. And so big business interests have ever more power and ever more control and influence in government, and that influence extends to regulations which are anti-competitive to the current powers that be and the current businesses that exist. And so it's very difficult to get a business open in America. It's very difficult to get something like that running. The regulations are extremely anti-competitive, anti-new business, anti-competition, and that's what the powers that be want. Meanwhile, over there in China, it's a very open playing field in that regard. And so at least it was when I was there. And even if it's, you don't go to China, there are other third world, I don't want to say oriental, that word for some reason is, but I'll say it, oriental countries that are much more friendly and welcoming to new business startups, and even Hong Kong. And so I found that it's a much friendlier and open and welcoming atmosphere to new businesses overseas, especially in Asian countries as compared to America, because there's just too much cronyism going on here to make it viable to open a new business in America.
Like, even though Colombia is a little bit on the communist side, so much easier to do business over there, man.
Yeah, that's going to be the case in any third world country. You know, you might think, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't want to go to a communist country to do business. No, that's right. You go there, you can do very well. They're hungry for money. Yeah. You got a rich, affluent country like America. You know, everybody is relatively rich compared to the rest of the world. And even the poorest American is in the top 5% worldwide in terms of earnings, income. So, you know, they can afford to, and the powers that be, the people who are in control of business here, your Amazons, your Walmarts, they get into cronyistic, parasitic relationships with the government, which is actual fascism, to exclude and keep out competition. But these third world countries, man, they're poor. They're hungry for new business. They're hungry for innovation. They're hungry for that revenue, that tax revenue, the jobs. They can't afford to pass on your entrepreneurship. So if you want a place where you can more freely do business, no, take yourself to a communist country. Take yourself to a third world country. That's where the opportunities are going to be. Not here in the U.S. Not if you're starting a new business.
That is 100% true, because what I am doing with Colombian, we're getting into the business side of things, but people gotta learn so they can understand what's going on. What I am doing with Colombia about business over there, the simplicity of doing business over there, is that a lot of American companies, they do this. Like if you, Uber in Colombia, the money doesn't go back to Uber America, it goes back to like Ireland. So what I am doing, I'm doing what the Google is doing, I'm doing what the elite Americans are doing, because, see, here's the thing. In America, all these tax laws are there to screw over the average American, yes, while the elites get to have their own tax loopholes that they take advantage of. This is what I am doing right now with Colombia, by having the business overseas, having my intellectual property here in America. Maybe later on I can move Artisanal Halal Cuisine, which is the parent company of Egyptian Shawarma. Maybe I'll move it off to Ireland or even Dubai. But I'm pretty much doing what the elites in America are doing by keeping their money overseas and just holding the IP, the intellectual property here in America.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people in the MGTOW community, man, they have no idea how any of this stuff works. They just watch videos, and then they go to their, you know, to their jobs that they That's my life until I get to retirement. It's like, dude, I'm like 45. I'm traveling all over the world, man. It's like, you gotta think outside the box. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that's why I want to shift my content creation away from the dunking on the libtards and focus more on practical applications of my philosophical principles in business and life. Because philosophy, what people don't understand is it's really a wholly Western concept, idea, creation created by Socrates. And he created philosophy for the sole purpose of solving real world problems. And the powers that be, that I want you to learn these necessary lessons, that I want you to learn to think logically, critically, reasonably in a way that you can solve your own problems. They want you to rely on others. They want you to rely on them. Well, I want you to be able to rely on yourself. And that's why I created my school of philosophy. And that's why I do what I do, is to try and give people the tools necessary to be self-sufficient so they can solve all of their own problems, not just a few. And so that's my passion. And that's what I would like to get back to. Hopefully I can.
I totally agree with that. And I'm going to state this before we end the video. Guys, always pay it forward. Because when you pay it forward to somebody, somebody is going to pay it forward to somebody else. Like when you guys helped me out with my campaign, I actually just helped out TRP with his campaign. So when you guys help us out, we're gonna help out other people. We're not like these welfare sponges who believe that it's our right to take your money and then go squander it on, you know, that black dude. I think he bought what, his family bought what, a McMansion or something like that,
Carmelo. Yeah, that situation is nuts. That is just crazy. I mean, talk about playing on the anti-white racism and the oppressor-oppressed Marxist narrative to get rich. I mean, they've got, yeah, they're living in a $900,000 mansion. They got over $600,000 in their GoFundMe. And why? Because their son killed a white kid because, oh, I don't know, he wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody, allegedly. I don't know why you would break. I don't even think he was competing in that track event from what I heard. Now, I could be wrong, but from what I heard, he wasn't even competing. He just showed up randomly in the other school's tent. He wasn't even competing in the track event, from what I understand. He was just there for what reason? He brings a knife to someone else's school, to a track event he's not even competing in, goes into their tent, tells them, touch me, see what happened, instigates some kind of confrontation, then stabs another kid, ostensibly just to see what it felt like to stab somebody. If you look into this kid's background, he's a wannabe thug. He's got pictures all over the internet, holding an AK, holding weapons, trying to look like a gangsta. His hairdo, the way that he comports himself, the way that he presents himself in public, he's got numerous past violations in his school for violence. You know, so the kid is not some kind of Aladdin who is just, oh, poor me, woe is me, I'm a victim, like they would like you to believe he is. He's a wannabe gangster, and personally, I believe that he went there because he wanted to kill a white kid, and he wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody. That's just my opinion. But everything I've seen tells me that's probably the case. And he's made $600,000 off of that.
Personally, my opinion is I think that is a psyop run by the CIA, because it's just way too bizarre. Not saying it really can't happen in real life. It's just that it's just a little bit way too bizarre for me to think that this is something that just happened. I think it might be a psyop.
It's certainly a weird occurrence, but it unfortunately is emblematic of just how bad things are getting, that the people who have actually built this country, that are, that actually created America, there was nothing here before, they created this country, and now they are supposedly the enemy and need to be destroyed and are so hated, not only by black people but their own kind, that you kill one of us and you get 600 grand for it. What kind of message does that send?
Yeah, really, if you think about it, like, I personally put my hands up in the air, I gave up on America. If I'm here in America, I'm just going to do my food truck, focus on MGTOW, chill out with the family. I don't want to do anything else here anymore, man. I'm done. I gave up.
I don't blame you. And that's, I also would like to create, I mean, I think to myself, I probably should have, I spent 14 years overseas. I got out. I know how to get out. I know what to do to get out. Why didn't I teach my fellow men about that stuff when my channel was popular? Why haven't I done that? Why haven't I? And because I got sucked in by the popularity of the dunk on the libtards, dunk on the dopey boss babe feminist chicks, when really I could have spent more of my time disseminating that information. And so I'd really like to make up for that when I think about it, yeah, and do that now because, again, the Duncan stuff is entertaining, but it gets views, but it's not particularly helpful in the grand scheme.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. All right, this was a really good chat, just like last time. Personally, I think it's even a little bit better because we took things to the next level. I'm hearing in your voice, you sound a lot better. This is good. I'm happier than I initially expected things to be, and I expected a lot of good things, but I'm even happier than it. I'm actually very happy that we had this conversation. You know, I woke up like a half hour before the conversation because, you know, I went to bed at like 6 a.m. Now I'm like, all right, let's get this, let's do it. And now I'm like, this is better than I initially thought. And I thought it was going to be really good to begin with. So I do thank you for coming on the air with us. I do thank you for making great content. I'm really looking forward to you making more content. And again, ladies and gentlemen, well, no ladies, let's be honest. Gentlemen is Pandocrat. No, he's not Pandocrat. His GoFundMe is going to be in the description below. I'm going to pin it in the comment section. Again, guys, literally every dollar helps us in the MGTOW community.
Well, thank you very much for the conversation, Amir. I also appreciate it. It was great to talk to you. And hopefully we can talk again in another 6-8 months, and I can tell you how much better my situation is, and we can talk about some of the content that I hopefully will be able to produce in the near future.
Yeah, and I would like to get back with you in 6 to 8 months. Hopefully by that time my restaurant will be doing a little bit better. Maybe I'll have a second location in Colombia. You never know.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. Yeah, the limit is only your imagination and what's not feasible practically, realistically. The more grounded and realistic and practical you are in your thinking, the more you can actually accomplish. And just be grounded and realistic in your goals, and I think you can achieve them.
Yes, sir. I believe in that 100%, and we are making that happen. You know, I read a quote a long time ago when I was in Hollywood, when I was homeless in Hollywood. I'd go to Barnes & Noble all the time to read books over there. It was in Pasadena. It was off of Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena, and I remember I read this book. The author said, if you reach for the stars, you'll never end up grabbing dirt. All right, my friend, thank you for the conversation, and we'll see what people say in the comment section. I'm pretty sure this one's going to be lit up as usual, and we'll see each other in the near future, definitely.
All righty, my friend, you take care.
I will. You too. Have a good one out there. Be safe.
I'll try. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.